great. The one other announcement would be if for some reason we get cut off, it hasn't happened too often, twice out of 65 sessions, but for some, every once in a while when we have bad weather get cut off, then we'll just we'll just finish the conversation at that point, and our next call is going to be on June 13th, and we have these calls every 2 weeks, and we like to discuss different issues that have to do with job training and job training programs. Both of you, do you both have programs right now or have grants in process?
Yes. This is Yvette from Pathways. Joe Griffiths is usually on the call. Joe couldn't make it today. Yes, we do. We have a grant that's actually in process right now where we're actually training. We're in the process of training about 35 folks, getting their HAZWOPA permit and in customer service and OSHA and CPA and things. I mean, CPR and all that kind of good stuff.
Good, good. And how about, and you all in Santa Fe have a program going too, don't you?
We do. We're just starting to ramp it up and putting together our curriculum. And I'm real interested to find out from others, you know, how you're able to put together your cohorts of folks and how you're designing the training so they can, you know, get through it if they're unemployed and you know, I'm kind of struggling with what was written in the grant. I didn't write it, of course.
Is this a matter of combining your different types of people that come from various backgrounds, or putting your program together? Are you focusing on a particular occupation, or
We have two training tracks, and one of them is to be an environmental technician, and that's 180 hours of training. And the second one is to do wildlands, forest restoration.
Oh, okay.
Our state is burning up.
Mm-hmm. Someone just joined.
Hello?
Hello, did someone just join?
Oh, yeah. Hi, this is Houston from North Omaha Contractors Alliance in Omaha, Nebraska.
Okay. Houston, we're talking to people from Santa Fe and from Virginia, and we're just talking about getting these programs together. One of the things we're going to talk about today are where the jobs are, but one of the and how to go about structuring your courses so that when your graduates get out, they'll be able to move into positions. But one of the things that I'll mention, and that in October we're going to be having our annual meeting, and this will be a great place to talk to people. Did someone just join in?
Yes, this is Carol from Harrisburg Area Community College. Sorry I'm late.
Okay, that's fine. And where are you located?
Harrisburg Area Community College in Pennsylvania.
Okay, Pennsylvania. Okay, great. In October, we'll be having our annual grantee meeting. And the nice thing about this meeting is we're going to sit down and, just as you were talking about, asking others how they're going about organizing their groups, how they're putting their cohorts together, how many in a program, how they're going through all of the different issues that one would have, whether it's setting up your curriculum, putting your curriculum together, following through with the students, doing mid-course assessments, working with advisory committees, and then all the way through the placement process. So we have nothing but we have sessions, breakout sessions for an intense day. And it's a great workshop to go to in Houston. I think you're going to be invited too, because those people who participate in the PLC will get an invite to this conference. And it's a great time for people who are wanting to improve their program and get feedback from all the other people. There are people who have been with this program since the beginning, some who have been funded and aren't getting funding anymore because they have funding from other sources, people that are in year one or year five or six will be there. And it's a great time to really hammer out free thinking some of these issues. And between now and then, of course, every 2 weeks we will be discussing some of these issues. And feel free in any one of these sessions, if you have a specific question on an issue, even if it's off topic, we can talk about this a little bit. One of the things that we want to keep in mind is the end product. So the success of the program is basically placing students at the end. And so we've always suggested working backwards, working from where the jobs are in your specific community and kind of working backwards to design a curriculum that will give them good credentials to get into those jobs and to get in as easy as possible. And, of course, the easiest thing is when it's a slam dunk. If you can get out there and find some employers who will indicate to you that we're going to hire anyone you graduate, if they have certain credentials, or they may not say we're not going to necessarily hire them, but we'll look at them, that's the group you want to cultivate, and you want to design your curriculum about them, because when we talk about curriculum, there are just so many ways you can go. In Santa Fe, you're going into forestry, which there's a big demand there. In Pennsylvania, you may have lead issues. Virginia, you may have wastewater issues. And we talked about Nebraska a couple weeks ago. You've got spill prevention control issues up there. So everyone's so different.
Yeah.
The real challenge, I think, is finding some employers or a group of employers that are interested in your program and saying, yeah, we need people badly, and we don't want to just pick them up off the street. And then what you want to try to do is get those people that are potential employers, and you get them involved in your program. And I like to do it in a way of asking them to be guest speakers, to be on your advisory board. If they're on your advisory board, it's really great because they could help direct a curriculum if there's certain things that they'd like to see someone get, whether it's beefing up math skills or beefing up a certain program that they feel would be important for their employees to have. You can include it. And one of the things we talked about last time was there really is no curriculum for this, because everyone is different, and it's really your graduates are going to be more dependent on your local employers and who's going to hire them. And when we start talking about where the jobs are, there are some areas that you all may want to look at real closely. And I've talked about this several times. They're municipal employees, but the water, wastewater area, you're going to be hearing more and more about it probably. I started talking about it about 8 months ago or a year ago when I first heard that EPA was interested, the people in water, wastewater wanted to get involved in this environmental training program. And then I realized why. I was involved in the agency in the early 70s. And when I was working in training then, there was a lot of training going on in water, wastewater, because there was a Clean Water Act passed in 1972, and then a Drinking Water Act, Safe Water, Drinking Water Act in 1974. And those required upgrades of all the water treatment plants and all the wastewater plants. And they had done a lot of studies that linked the efficiency of the plant to trained and certified operators. So all of a sudden, there was this huge push, kind of like the weatherization push that we were having about a year ago. Yeah. And everyone was getting, there was a lot of training going on in water, wastewater. Well, there was tens of thousands of positions. And if you look into, there's a website I'll tell you about and put in the notes on Career Outlook. Most states have about 3,000 to 4,000 water, wastewater operators working. And if you back up the time, and these are usually municipal workers, sometimes they work for the the municipality, or they may work for the contractor who is operating the plant. And smaller plants are often operated by independent contractors. But they're looking at the fact that these people are starting to retire now. They're all in their 50s, some are in their 60s. The average age is, I think, around 50 now of people working in water, wastewater plant. That's the average age. They feel that in the next 5 years to 10 years, about 40% of these people will be retiring. Well, when you start talking about 40% of 3,000 people in one state, you're talking about quite a big demand for water, wastewater treatment plant operators. Many states, they're municipal workers, and they have to be certified. And to get certified, they usually have some educational requirements. So one of the things that you may want to look at, particularly in this latest grant, that when water, wastewater is supporting the environmental job training program, is talk to your municipalities and find out what they're doing about their wastewater treatment plant operators. If there is a need, some may be training in-house because there aren't training facilities. There are a few community colleges that are doing training, but you'd have to find out what it takes to get a certification, and particularly on entry level. The thing about water, wastewater operators is a lot of on-the-job training, because it involves how to work the pumps and the machinery in the plant. So what would happen is you would give them, in your program, a basic training program that covers all the environmental issues, and then they would then do some on-the-job training. And this is a great possibility for people who would want to combine their program with an on-the-job training program. For say, if you worked up a memorandum of understanding with the municipal water plant operators, that you would do some of the academic training, and then they would pick them up as interns and move into on-the-job training to give them experience in that plant, and then they might be able to replace people who are going to be retiring. So, but this is one of the big areas that we see a lot of job opportunities coming up in the next several years. Of course, it all really depends on your local needs assessment, and again, it's going to be a question of either is it going to be a municipality that's going to be hiring them, or is it going to be consulting firms hiring them, or is it going to be, you know, enterprise, our private sector people hiring them, like UPS and FedEx or trucking companies for spills and that type of thing. What have y'all got any strong indications of a strong demand for a particular occupation in your area? Now in Santa Fe, I assume you see forest restoration as being a big opening there because of fires. Is that it in the Santa Fe area? How about in Pennsylvania?
Well, we have a great need for wastewater operators, and we've actually incorporated into our current class. We have the State Department of Environmental Protection come in and give us a feel about the need for wastewater treatment plant operators, and it's gone over rather well because you really don't need a formal education. In fact, you don't need any education to take the test. They highly recommend that you take a course so that you're up to speed on all the requirements. But I think your point is well taken, that that's probably one of the biggest areas for job demands, at least in our state.
Mm-hmm. Is there a process you're going to find out about how to get them out of your program and into that to take those tests that they need to take? Or how do you see that as occurring?
Well, this is the first time we did it. We've had four training courses. The last two we've done it. And being a community college, our community college offers a wastewater operator training program, which takes them through to the licensing part of it, where they can take the test. So that's one option for them. And for people who are unemployed, there's funding available. I think it's state funding, I'm not sure, that they can actually pay to have to take that class. So there's kind of a fit there for people who are truly interested in pursuing that.
That's really neat. So in other words, you in your program, you could lead them right up to the test and even maybe even have them take the test as part of the program, perhaps.
Well, for our current program, no, because we don't have it set up that way. We're thinking about if there's another grant that comes out that we would do it more exclusively for water and wastewater operators. Mm-hmm. But right now, mm-hmm. the aspect of the Brownfield Environmental Training Program is just to make them aware of what's out there. So it's more of like a four-hour awareness class. Mm-hmm. And then if they are interested, then they have to pursue the other avenue through the other state funding to actually take the class at our college, which is it's a fairly expensive class. It's like a six-month class. I think it's 240 hours or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a 1 or 2 week kind of thing.
Right. So the nice thing is you're going to give them a general education in all things environmental in terms of they're going to have a HAZWOPER, so they'll be familiar with hazardous materials, and you'll be giving them some sampling and analysis and chemical spills, so they're going to have a good background. And then if they want to specialize in the water, wastewater, you can lead them into that area too.
Right. Yeah. People have really expressed interest from the outside. Some of the local municipalities, we have a couple of larger cities that have fairly big plants. They think it's great because the people have the HAZWOPER, and we also do confined space. So they think that's also a good part of what would help them in their jobs at these facilities too.
That's great, and consequently, and concurrent to the municipal operators, if you are become known as a training facility for municipal operators, there's a lot of private sector operators in some states. There are a lot of small plants, and they're operated by private sector firms, and it also opens up another area rather than the traditional employment approach where you're hired by a municipality or a private sector. It may even open up opportunities for manpower firms. Many of our grantees during this very slow period are finding that their best employers are actually the tech firms, the manpower firms. And particularly when you have disasters such as whether it's Katrina or Joplin, Missouri, or storms, forest fires, hurricanes in industrial areas, all of a sudden there's this huge spike for people with HAZWOPER. And, of course, through Katrina, we had an incredible demand for people with HAZWOPER, and they were calling programs all over the country. We had people from California going down there, from the Northeast going down there, and if you had the HAZWOPER, they were recruiting you. And of course, these were national firms, and they needed to know that you existed and what your core competencies were. One of the things that we're doing every year, HMPRI is publishing a core capabilities document, and we list all the graduates, all the programs that are active, and we ask for their certifications, their graduation dates, the number of graduates in the program, and not only what certifications they have, but what core competencies they have. And we try to circulate that document and also give it to EPA to give to EPA contractors so that if something does come up and they're recruiting nationally, they can give the director of the program a call and say, you know, how close are you to graduation, and do you have some students that we might be able to recruit? And that's an excellent way. The only problem with the manpower firms is sometimes that tends to be more temporary employment and involves travel, where you know, your municipal jobs are great jobs because, as in the case of water, wastewater jobs are great because when you're hired, it takes a lot of time to bring you up to speed and working in that plant. You get to know that plant, and you're a municipal employee. So for those people who like to stay in a community and have family and roots in a community, they can be there their entire career, and then, of course, they're in the municipal or county benefits program. So, and there's only so much you could cut back, and when you're talking about water, wastewater, they're pretty much at the staffing levels they need to operate, and it's not like you could start cutting staff on the operations level. So they're very secure jobs, and they're long-term jobs, and very stable. So there are students who like to travel and like to get out, but then there's many that they just want to stay put, and those are great jobs to go after. Another place where we have people suggest looking is the job boards. And we set up one with the Brownfields Renewal Project. Brownfields Renewal is a magazine that for brownfields in communities. And the people at that and ourselves set up they have a jobs board where you could post your resumes. It's still in the process of growing and ramping up. It's been sponsored pretty much by Aero, which is a national environmental job recruitment firm. And they do post jobs there. We're hoping that that will grow and there'll be other employers that may look to that for resumes and may post their resumes. But the job boards aren't really nearly as effective as when you have direct links of people coming into your program and actually speaking to your students and looking to see what your program's like, and they're kind of bonded with you. But another thing you may also want to consider in whether it's New Mexico or Pennsylvania or Nebraska is these professional meetings. Florida is very active, Oklahoma, Ohio, they're all very active. And these are brownfields associations that each state has. And if your state has a brownfields association, you really want to get involved in them because when you're there, you might even be able to present a paper about your program. And if you hear about a statewide brownfields meeting, if you can, I would suggest calling them up and seeing if you might be able to attend that or even present a paper to talk about your specific program. Because nice thing about the brownfields associations, for example, in Oklahoma or Ohio or Florida, the members are all stakeholders. They all have vested interests, and they're contractors, and they're people who need people with environmental credentials. And again, the idea is them to get to know your program so they can call you as soon as they're looking for people. This is a two-way street. You know, we're always looking for employers, but we have to keep in mind that the employers are looking for people with credentials, and the kids coming out of our programs have, you know, half a dozen certificates that are worth several thousand dollars, and they've been basically vetted. They've gone through a rigorous program. They've had the awareness training. They've had the certifications. So they're just a big step ahead of anyone else that they're going to try to interview that's coming off the street. But besides the state professional meetings, you may also look at the national meetings. For example, in September, I believe, if you go to Water Wastewater Association, they're going to have a huge meeting. It's a national meeting, but even though it's a national meeting, the people who exhibit there and give papers there and the employers there often are in every state. And they're the major employers. And it's a great place to get contacts and leave your cards and contact information so that they could contact you when they're looking at graduates. And not only that, is they may be familiar with some operations that they have in your state. So you, if you have a chance and you can get to one of them, the Wastewater Association, for example, and I think it's going to be in Louisiana this year, would be a great thing to go to. Solid Waste Associations, they also have annual meetings. And again, the refuse and recycling conventions, they have all of the companies there. And it's a great place to just to network and leave your cards. One of the other things when we start talking about placing our students are these job fairs. Job fairs can be really, they're probably at the same level as the job boards. They could be really good, but they could be really bad. And what we usually suggest on job fairs, if there's going to be a job fair in your community, that you work around it and you find out who the exhibitors and participants of the job fair are going to be, and then try to contact those people before the fair. And if you can talk to them as a representative of the environmental job training program and suggest that if you could have special treatment or have your students talk to them, even maybe off-site or off the time of the fair, that you could give them a very good explanation of the background of what you do, the credentials that all these students are going to have, and if they would be interested to talk to you specifically. And often you've got companies like UPS, you might have some insurance companies, or you might have trucking companies, you might have waste hauling. They're looking for people in all occupations, but if you've already talked to them and say you've got this special program and you've got a group of students, you'd like them to come to the job fair, but you'd like to tell them about your graduates before they come to their booth, they're going to have a much easier time to secure jobs and getting interviews with the company. So those are kind of the approaches you want to go through to try to develop these career paths that come from your training program and through graduation and then out. And, of course, we've always got the Department of Labor one-stops, and we've got the local community college placement centers, too, that help. But we found that usually a very specialized program like these environmental job training programs, you really have to do some personal contacting. And what's going to happen, particularly on the new programs, when you get started, you start going along, and if you have not engaged the employers in the program, it starts to get scary as they approach graduation, because then you start thinking of, how am I going to place these students, and I really need to place them. And so the job is so much easier if you can engage those employers early as possible into this whole process. You're just going to be way ahead of the game. So one of the things we try to do is keep these discussions down to 30 minutes. So did anyone have any questions this week about anything? Job placement or some of the approaches you might use?
Hello?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This is Yvette in Virginia. And I was
yes.
just wondering, could you give me the, is there a website that you can go to for the brownfield renewal that you're actually talking about?
Yes. Yes. What I'll do is send post-session notes. Do we have your email on our list? Did you get an email from us?
It was actually forwarded to me.
Okay.
And so I'm not specifically on your email list.
Okay. I could either
put
you on our email.
Yeah, you can put me on your email list. Let me give it to you now. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, it's E as in every. Roots, R-O-O-T-S, just like a tree root.
Okay.
And that's at Pathways, P-A-T-H-W-A-Y-S. Then there's a hyphen in the middle, va.org.
Va.org, okay.
Yeah, V's in Victor.
Okay. That's like a dash hyphen, right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. eRoots at pathways-va.org. We'll
yes.
put you on the list, and
okay.
we'll put these links to, I'm going to put the links to the Brownfield Renewal in there. I'm also going to put a link to the Career Outlook website. It's great. It's careeroutlook.us. And what you could put in there, and they have wastewater treatment plant operators. The SIC code for wastewater treatment plant operators is, you know, Department of Labor gives everything a code. And the problem
right.
is most environmental jobs are not in the SIC code, unfortunately. It turns out that it's such a specialized area that they don't have a breakdown for each occupational code. But because wastewater treatment plants were in such demand back in the 70s, they were able to get their own SIC code, and that's and I'll put it in there. It's 51-8031.00, and you can go to Career Outlook, and you can look up in your state how many people are working in that occupation, how many current workers, the salary entry level, and what the growth outlook is in that state, also for those people. So I'll put those all into the post-session notes for you.
Okay, that'd be great.
And hopefully we'll see y'all or talk to y'all in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
So you have a good couple of weeks, and thanks for joining us today.
All right, thanks.
Okay,
talk
bye.
To you later.
All right, bye.